We are deeply worried that many girls may not be allowed back into school.
Taliban seeks UN audience. It's Friday, September 24th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Chris Cascale in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Biden hosts COVID-19 summit. Thailand ramps up vaccinations. Myanmar junta violations investigated. COVID vaccines for young children. Helping women and children in need. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Afghanistan's Taliban leaders have asked to have their representatives speak to the United Nations General Assembly this week, as other world leaders call on the Taliban to grant equal rights and opportunities to girls and women. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Now back in charge in Afghanistan, Taliban leaders are trying to present a sense of normalcy. Here, heavily armed Taliban fighters and their families walked around the zoo in Kabul on a recent outing. Taliban leaders have asked to address the UN General Assembly this week and named spokesman Suhail Shaheen as their representative. The UN said a committee will rule on the request, but that is not likely to happen during the current session. In a recent interview with VOA, Shaheen said the Taliban and the U.S. were adversaries during the war, as he put it, when our country was occupied, but said things could be different now.
Now we are in a new chapter. We want to turn over a new page. In that page, it depends on the U.S., whether they are coming for work to help in the construction of Afghanistan, in eradication of poverty in the country, help us in other sectors like education sector, infrastructure, and if they want to come and invest in the country, so they are welcome.
Afghanistan's current ambassador to the UN, Ghulam Izakai, was appointed in July by the former government of President Ashraf Ghani and continues to speak out on social media against the Taliban. U.S. President Joe Biden addressed the UN General Assembly.
We've ended 20 years of conflict in Afghanistan. And as we close this period of relentless war, we're opening a new era of relentless diplomacy, of using the power of our development aid to invest in new ways of lifting people up around the world, of renewing and defending democracy.
The Emir of Qatar, Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad Al Thani.
We stress the importance of the international community continuing to provide support to Afghanistan at this critical stage and to separate humanitarian aid from political differences. We also stress the importance of continuing dialogue with the Taliban, because boycotting only leads to polarization and reactions. As for dialogue, it can bring positive results.
In a UN forum on Afghan women, the executive director of UNICEF had a message for Taliban leaders. Henrietta Four is the UNICEF executive director.
It is critically important that girls and boys in Afghanistan have an equal chance to learn and to develop the skills they need to thrive. We are deeply worried that many girls may not be allowed back into school.
The Taliban have said a religious scholar will decide on how girls will be able to attend school under Islamic law, known as Sharia, as soon as possible. The Taliban ordered boys back to school this week, but made no mention of allowing girls or women teachers to return to class. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
We invite you to read more on our top story by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia. We're also on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Australia plans to reopen international borders by Christmas. U.S. and China unveil separate big steps to fight climate change. U.S. and European allies navigate Australian submarine deal's wake. Manila mayor launches campaign for Philippine presidency. At UN, climate and COVID top leaders' concerns. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and on the voanews.com website. You're listening to VOA Asia on this Friday. U.S. President Joe Biden convened a virtual COVID-19 summit Wednesday on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly, aiming to rally world leaders, philanthropists, civil society, non-governmental organizations, and industry to defeat the virus by the end of 2022. He also announced an additional donation of 500 million doses of the Pfizer vaccine. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wiedekuswara has more.
Let's recommit in the fight to end the pandemic. That's the message that U.S. President Joe Biden sent to world leaders at the virtual COVID-19 summit he convened on Wednesday. He announced donating 500 million more doses of the Pfizer vaccine, increasing the total U.S. pledge to 1.1 billion doses.
For every one shot we've administered to date in America, we have now committed to do 3 shots to the rest of the world.
It's not clear when these shots will be delivered. About 200 million doses from the initial 500 million pledge Biden announced in June will ship by end of 2021, 300 million by mid-2022. Biden also announced an additional $750 million to get those shots in arms around the world and $1.4 billion to reduce COVID-19 deaths and transmission. Humanitarian organizations welcome more vaccines, but say wealthy nations cannot donate their way out of the pandemic. Kate Elder is Senior Vaccines Policy Advisor for Doctors Without Borders Access Campaign.
Donations are done at the discretion of the donor. There's very little accountability for delivery. We've already seen hundreds of millions of doses pledged by wealthy governments, similar to the United States, other countries in Europe, with a pretty poor delivery rate so far. So we need doses in arms right now.
Biden also called on leaders to address a worldwide shortage of oxygen for COVID patients and to make tests, PPE, and therapeutics more available. Another key target, preparing for and preventing future pandemics. The U.S. is calling for the creation of a financial intermediary fund for pandemic preparedness at the World Bank. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris.
We, the United States, are prepared to contribute at least $250 million to help get this fund started. We have also requested an additional $850 million from the United States Congress.
According to Doctors Without Borders, fewer than 2% of people in developing countries have received even a single dose of COVID vaccine, while the U.S. has secured enough to protect its entire population of 330 million people and still have more than 500 million doses left over. The U.S. also has been criticized for its plan to provide booster shots for older Americans and those with underlying conditions, despite calls from the World Health Organization that wealthy nations instead give extra doses to countries with low vaccination rates. The administration says it can give boosters and help vaccinate the world, but the goal will depend on a robust vaccine manufacturing capacity. Meanwhile, COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. have climbed to an average of more than 1,900 a day for the first time since early March, mostly among the 71 million Americans who refuse vaccinations despite them being free and readily available. Patsy Wiedekuswara, VOA News at the White House.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, Thailand ramps up vaccinations ahead of a planned reopening. Happening now in Asia, 47 Hong Kong pro-democracy activists charged under the Beijing-imposed national security law appeared in court Thursday morning, with most having been detained since March. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Thailand's COVID-19 vaccination rate currently stands at less than 25% of the population, as the government says it is ramping up inoculations ahead of a planned reopening of several key tourist regions. Chiang Mai and its surrounding areas in the northern part of the country are among the locations included in the plan to reopen by October 15th. Steve Sanford visited Chiang Mai and has this report for VOA.
Here in the remote Thai village of Taphong, residents welcome the arrival of the long-awaited vaccination rollout plan with mixed feelings. Many in the crowd are leery of receiving the two shots, which include China's Sinovac biotech COVID-19 vaccine and Indian-made AstraZeneca vaccine, as reports of serious side effects and low efficacy rates circulate in the media.
I don't trust them because I heard many rumors that people got affected by the vaccine, so I was very worried, but right now I must get the vaccine because they're campaigning for every village to get it.
At the start of the pandemic, Thai health officials credited the strict lockdowns and mask mandates for keeping cases low, a practice that continues today. As the pandemic spread in the urban centers, however, there was disproportionate distribution of vaccines, at least in the initial stages, giving added momentum to anti-government protest critical of the pandemic response, and even demanding the resignation of the prime minister.
In Sambathon, we haven't had a cluster yet. We don't have people who've been affected by COVID because everybody's very careful to protect themselves by wearing a mask when they go out in public.
Meanwhile, in Chiang Mai, tourist-related businesses are scrambling to vaccinate staff to meet the government's new tourism health guidelines. Thailand's tourism authority requires 100% staff vaccination for businesses to qualify and get included in international traveler packages for foreign visitors, beginning in November. But Dom Umpapantawang, who opened his second hotel before the pandemic, is currently just at 50% staff inoculations and keen to speed things up.
Whatever vaccine we get right now, whether it's Sinovac or Sinopharm, this is our first vaccine for our frontline staff before we go for our second shot in the future.
As the high season approaches, when many travel businesses make the most profit, the rush to safely and quickly meet international health standards continues across the country. Steve Sanford for VOA News, Chiang Mai, Thailand.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia is also on Twitter and YouTube. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, read, and share all the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news, information, and great features.
This news alert from VOA Asia. In New Zealand, hundreds gathered Thursday at a candlelight vigil for three young girls who were killed last week in a crime that shocked the country. Reports say the children's mother has been charged with murder. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. A UN investigator on Myanmar has accused the country's military junta of systematic attacks against the people of Myanmar that may amount to crimes against humanity. The report by the special rapporteur was submitted Wednesday to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In a blistering attack against Myanmar's coup leaders, Special Investigator Thomas Andrews presented documented evidence of mass atrocity crimes against the people of Myanmar. He says more than 1,100 people have been killed, more than 8,000 arbitrarily arrested, and more than 230,000 forcibly displaced. This since the military junta seized control of the democratically elected government of Aung San Suu Kyi February 1st. He described in wrenching detail the killings of protesters in the streets, of beatings and torture of people in detention, of entire villages being attacked by bombs and rocket-propelled grenades. He said no one is spared, not even the children. He noted at least 75 children aged 14 months to 17 years have been killed by junta forces as of July.
I've also received credible reports of children being tortured, including two boys who were starved and then had their legs burnt with iron rods. Now the junta is increasingly relying on another depraved tactic, the use of collective punishment, including the abduction of family members of those who have been issued arrest warrants, but who police and military forces are unable to locate.
Andrew said the people are not taking the general's abuse lying down. He said members of the deposed civilian government and ethnic leaders have formed a national unity government as a legitimate opposition to the junta. He said civilian-led people's defense forces are providing security for villages. But he noted Myanmar would not gain its independence without vigorous support and action by the international community.
In my view, the well-intentioned efforts of those who have sought to end this violence through engagement and dialogue will not succeed as long as the military junta lacks the will to end its brutality, and this can only come with leverage. The fact is, current efforts by the international community to stop the downward spiral of events in Myanmar are simply not working.
The UN investigator called for coordinated international action and targeted economic sanctions against the junta. For example, he said sanctions on Myanmar oil and gas enterprise could stop the junta from continuing to steal the country's natural resource wealth. He said a comprehensive embargo of weapons and dual-use technology could save lives. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Making headlines in Asia, China and Pakistan have again urged the global community to assist Taliban-led Afghanistan to prevent a looming humanitarian crisis, with Beijing calling for an end to all kinds of unilateral economic sanctions against the turmoil-hit South Asian nation. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, this week, Pfizer released promising news in the effort to end the coronavirus pandemic, saying its COVID-19 vaccine works for young children. VOA's Carol Pearson has more on this development.
The COVID-19 vaccine made by Pfizer and its German partner, BioNTech, is already available for anyone age 12 and older. Now Pfizer says clinical trials show the vaccine also works for children as young as 5. Dr. Bill Gruber is a Pfizer senior vice president and pediatrician.
I'm very pleased to announce that we have the first data that we're going to be submitting to the FDA that demonstrates a robust immune response and a satisfactory safety profile for the Pfizer BioNTech mRNA vaccine in children 5 to 11 years of age.
Pfizer tested a much lower dose for the younger children, about a third of what older children and adults get. The company shared early data with infectious disease specialists such as Dr. Frank Esper at Cleveland Clinic Children's.
Despite the smaller dose in the smaller children, it actually showed to be as vigorous as the other data we had for older age groups. So we're seeing the antibody response as robust and the threshold, it's meeting that protective threshold.
While children are at a lower risk of severe illness or death from COVID-19 than adults, cases in children have risen because the Delta variant is far more infectious than other variants.
Yeah, particularly in the setting of the Delta variant, hospitals are seeing more pediatric cases. My understanding is that for those children that are hospitalized, a quarter of them are ending up in intensive care. Fortunately, deaths are uncommon, but nonetheless, this is a huge burden.
Children can also have side effects long after they've cleared the virus. Like older children and adults, children aged 5 to 11 need a 2-dose regimen to be fully immunized. The data show they have side effects like those in older age groups, namely fatigue, headache, muscle pain, and the like. But there were no reports of a type of heart inflammation called myocarditis that a small number of teenage boys have experienced after getting the vaccine. Pfizer expects high demand for the vaccine from parents of young children. Again, Dr. Bill Gruber from Pfizer.
We had more people volunteering quickly than we could accommodate in the trial.
10-year-old Maya Huber of New Jersey was one of the more than 2,000 children who participated in the study. Her mother, Dr. Nisha Gandhi, is a critical care doctor.
Seeing people die from COVID, the fear of bringing COVID home to our family has been and is terrifying.
U.S. regulators could approve the vaccine for children between 5 and 11 sometime in October. Fast action could stem a potential surge of coronavirus cases in schools. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
Finally on VOA Asia, Women Giving Back is a nonprofit in the U.S. state of Virginia that helps women and children who are undergoing financial hard times or who are struggling to start over after leaving abusive relationships. Maxim Moskalkov has the story.
It looks like a regular store. Clothing on the racks, shoes on display, jewelry, cosmetics, kids' toys, diapers, and much more. But what you don't see here are cash registers or salespeople. Everything in this boutique is free, thanks to Women Giving Back, a nonprofit charity group in Sterling, Virginia, that has been helping women and children for the last 15 years.
We serve domestic violence programs. We serve women coming out of incarceration. We serve human trafficking, sex trafficking victims. We serve unaccompanied minors that are in the detention centers that are just coming into the country.
Terry Stadji, founder of Women Giving Back, started working in charity in early 2000s. Back then, her advertising agency worked closely with a nonprofit that was building shelters for the homeless. At some point, the nonprofit asked whether Stadji would be willing to become a member of their board of directors, all men at that time.
And they had decided we really had to find some way to get the women in our industry more involved. So I went out and interviewed a lot of different shelters and agencies and said, what can we do? The men were doing the sticks and bricks. What could I empower all the women to do? And they said, without fail, we need clothing. So I was able to put a call out to the women in the industry, and they came out like women do, in full force.
At first, their work resembled a garage sale. Only it was held every month without fail. But soon the demand became so great, they had to expand and find a permanent building that would become home for the nonprofit.
We've set it up as a boutique. So when the women come in here, they feel like they're shopping. They're not getting a handout. Everything is free. They don't ever pay for anything. And we have volunteers that are here to help them pick things out. We find outfits for them.
The boutique has everything regular stores do. Seasonal sales, Halloween-themed goods, fancy prom dresses, and school supplies.
These are elementary school-age backpacks, and they're already, our volunteers have already stuffed them with needed school supplies for the kids to go back to school.
There are only 3 people on staff and over 4,000 volunteers helping out. Every customer can pick up to 50 items.
This program actually helped me a lot. Emotionally and mentally, it took like part of my burdens off.
Jen Haas is a former customer and a mother of 3 who faced domestic violence. Today, she's a Women Giving Back ambassador and an activist.
I do speaking engagements at local high schools. I also speak for other charitable organizations. I do donation drives out of my home.
Today, Women Giving Back is looking for a new building for its boutique because the one it has now is too small. And sadly, though, the wave of donations doesn't dry out, neither does the number of women and children who come here for help. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Sterling, Virginia.
Read and see more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook. Thank you for listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook, VOA Asia. Follow us on Twitter at VOA Asia. You can also find us on Instagram, YouTube, and at voanews.com. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our service chief, Diane Gao. Our VOA Asia team includes Doug Bernard, Amy Hybels, Keith Lane, and Jim Stevenson. I'm Chris Casquio in Washington. Enjoy your day.